Welcome to the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Each week, Jess and Julia sit down with Hollywood's biggest names to discuss their current projects and take a trip down memory lane as they dive deep into their classic catalogs. SiriusXM presents the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Now, here are your hosts, Jess and Julia.
Now, the star of Yellow Jackets, which is going to be coming out November 14th on Showtime, is here with us. She's a national treasure, is all I can say. Get the Addams Family, The Ice Storm, The Opposite of Sex. She's played everyone from Lizzie Borden to Zelda Fitzgerald, and now this great show. Christina Ricci, thank you for being here.
Oh, no, thank you for having me, and thank you for labeling me national treasure. I feel like that'll make me safer anytime out and about in this country.
You must be protected at all costs. I think yes. When there should be a law.
That's why the national treasure label is valuable, and I've always kind of coveted it. So great.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a law that when you're out, if you're like at the Brentwood Country Mart or whatever, I think there's a law that people just have to surround you and, you know, face the other way just to make sure. Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's Christina Ricci, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, we came in on Cher singing the Shoop Shoop song. And I tell you, Christina, I went down, I thought, oh, that'd be fun to play while Christina Ricci's here. And I must have watched that video like 8 times. No exaggeration. It is a slice of joy that never goes away.
I probably had way too much fun making that video when I was 10. I was like,
was it fun?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, I was 10. We're shooting a music video. It's with Cher, Winona. They gave me a leather jacket to put makeup on me. You know what I mean? Like, I was a child. Yeah. I was like, girl, you want me to dance? Watch this, you know? So.
Cher, take notes.
I probably had more fun on that shoot than was really warranted.
Well, I noticed they also, during the video, they show little behind the scenes parts. It's in the music video, and Cher picks you up and twirls you over her head, which I thought was cute.
Yeah, we were very close. She was so lovely, wonderful to me. We had such a nice relationship, and yeah, she was great. I love her.
And that's a good Halloween movie to watch too.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Considered a Halloween movie, but
yeah, there's a big Halloween part. Yep.
Christina, before we get to Yellow Jackets, just because there's so much to break down there, how are you feeling? And congratulations.
Thank you. I feel good. I'm enormously pregnant. I'm almost 9 months. And
wow.
I'm good. You know, I was very lucky. I mean, I shot Yellow Jackets for most of my pregnancy. So I'm lucky that I really had I've had a very easy pregnancy so far.
Oh, wow. And were you showing a lot while you, because we've seen the first couple of episodes and you don't look pregnant.
Yeah, in the beginning, the last episode or two.
Were you holding like a briefcase in front of your belly?
Yeah, one of the directors who worked on it was like, so I'm coming up with a lot of like things for you to do in front of you and carry. I was like, you can't really tell. She was like, yeah, I saw the dailies from the last episode and you can. And I was like, oh my God, okay.
You're doing the classic pregnancy stance where you're like leaning back with your hands.
Yeah, waddling, just all waddling. And I knew I was pregnant in the beginning. So we kind of chose the way Misty dresses. She was dressed so that as my pregnancy progressed, it would not be difficult to hide jackets and layers and all kinds of things like that. And she's not like a character that dresses well. So it wasn't like we had to worry about her looking good. And that was actually one thing I loved about this character. It's really fun to play someone who's sort of free of vanity.
So Christina, for anyone who missed the last half hour of the show where Julia and I were talking about it endlessly, would you set up it's going to come out on Showtime November 14th, set your calendars. Cause it's a ride based on the first couple of episodes that we've seen, but can you set it up for us?
Well, basically the show cuts between 1996 and the present. And in 1996, a girls' soccer team from New Jersey goes to play a championship somewhere. I forget where in the world they're going, but they're on a private plane that crashes and they're stranded in the woods. And where they are stranded, there's just clearly something wrong. It is, I guess, a very cheap and easy way to say it is that the woods appear to be haunted. There is a supernatural element there that is affecting their experience. And the things that happen while they are there lead them to, in the present, when we see the characters that do survive in the present, their behavior is very extreme, and they're desperately trying to avoid and hide the reality of their past and what they did while they were stranded as teenage girls. And so we cut kind of, and then in the present, it all kind of kicks off again because somebody reaches out and is attempting to blackmail them and find out what happened. I guess the whole thing is that ever since they came back, as whenever they were rescued, they have never revealed what went on and they all agreed to not speak about it. And so people eventually stopped asking, the press or what have you, but now 20 years later, it's being brought up again, and it's how the whole kind of experience starts happening again for them as adults. And we cut in between the two times.
Well, and will you set up who Misty was in 1996 and how we see her in present day?
Well, Misty in 1996, she is not on the team. She is sort of she's the equipment manager. Misty has no social currency. She is awkward. She is socially inept. She is not pretty. She is not cool. She's very much somebody who would have a very painful time in high school. And she just loves the soccer team. And with no self-awareness, is completely in awe of these girls and roots for them. And she's kind of like a puppy, really. And then once they crash, she ends up being this character who has absolutely no problem doing the most disgusting kind of cutthroat, crazy things. You know, like something's infected, you got to cut it off type of vibe, which for like a 13-year-old girl is pretty intense.
She's hardcore.
She's hardcore.
Yeah. And she actually has a lot of medical knowledge. The idea being with the I don't know if we see this in the show, but the creators always discuss with me that her parents are doctors. So she actually has the information about how to treat the injured, and she has no problem doing so. And once she realizes that all of a sudden she is valued and has social currency, being stranded in the woods becomes something really great for her, where it's not so great for everybody else. So then as an adult, when we see her, she's been returned to this world where she has no social currency, where she is not valued. And I mean, this, our culture would not value a person like Misty. She has spent 20 years trying to eke out a little bit of happiness, control, and power in a very small sort of punishing box. And so when everything kicks off again, she's the only adult character that is just thrilled to bits that the past might be starting again.
And she's also, Misty as an adult is kind of an amateur detective also. Like she's one of those people who, you know, goes online and solves crimes. Like characters.
Don't F with cats, yes.
Exactly. She's one of them. So I don't know. I love the way that it seems like every few minutes you get more information about these characters and who they are, and they become like you discover they're all pretty twisted. Like
that's one of my favorite things about the show is like they're all these women are horrible people. They all do terrible things.
Even when they were teenagers,
they're not safe. Yeah, none of them are safe as adults. Like you wouldn't trust them. And while they're entertaining, they're not your typical kind of representation of women historically in film and TV, which is that women always have to be likable or they have to be the extreme villain. So these characters really do occupy a space that was formerly reserved only for men.
Yeah, and it's also just a reminder that all teenagers are feral. Male, female, whatever. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think they're very, full on.
So very animal. About teenagers. Yeah.
You are listening to the Jess Cagle Show with Julia Cunningham. We're here with National Treasure, Christina Ricci, who is, she's got this new show coming out called Yellow Jackets on Showtime. It comes out November 14th. And it's Melanie Lynskey and Christina Ricci and Juliette Lewis. Just a great cast and a great setup about a soccer team that was stranded in 1996, a high school soccer team, and they did terrible things on this haunted stretch of wilderness that they were at. And then we're 25 years later, and their lives now in the past is catching up to them. And you see those two timelines, and it's really, really super fun. You also, Christina, I'm sure that you can't tell us anything because there's a Wachowski with a rifle trained on you, but what about the Matrix Resurrections?
Yeah, I'm excited for that to come out and for everyone to see it and to be actually be able to talk about it.
Well, you want to say what anything? Was the experience like having done Speed Racer and then Matrix Resurrection? Like, did that, you know, has Lana become even further? And, you know, like, what was your experience like in 2008? What was it like going back on set?
Well, Lana contacted me because she said that she only wanted to work with people that she'd worked with before and had great experiences with. And so that was great. And then it really was like rejoining a family unit. Much of the same crew was there. We were shooting in Berlin, same stages. It was a really just a great experience. And Speed Racer was so much fun to make and so cool. And there's just like a level of filmmaking that you cannot imagine until you are on one of those sets. And you're just like, wow, so this is like, I thought I was making movies before, but this is crazy. Like four units and special effects you've never seen before. And just people able to keep things in their minds that you're like, how are you doing all of this at the same time? Like, you know what I mean? Like just a really impressive level of filmmaking. So it's just such a joy to be involved in something like that.
We came in on the Shoop Shoop song. We talked about that amazing music video for a minute. But when you made Mermaids, you were probably, I guess you were 9 when it came out, which means you were 8 when you did it.
I was 9 when I made it.
And what's your greatest memory of that movie?
Oh my God. Well, I have so many good memories. I spent most of that shoot just really getting to hang out with Cher, which was amazing. And, you know, she would hide me in her trailer during production meetings because she wanted me to know what was going on. And she taught me so many things. And, you know, I was this 9-year-old from New Jersey. So there were so many things that I had never seen before. I mean, like the other day I was talking about the first time I ever saw Perrier. It was on the set of Mermaids. Wow. You know what I mean? Like things like that, like things you would never think of. I was like, people, oh, this bubbly water is amazing. This fancy water people are drinking. Just like little things like that. And, you know, being exposed to so many different kinds of people in one place. It was really great.
And I know that working as a kid and being famous as a kid was a mixed bag for you as it is for everybody. But what was your, what did you do before that? Like, do you remember the first time that you were in front of a camera?
I did a lot of auditioning before I ever got anything. I remember my first audition and being struck by how they didn't want me to behave like a child, but it was like this exaggerated version of being a child. I watched another girl do it and I was like, that's interesting. I would not have naturally done that. It was sort of, you know, like a campier version of childhood, which I took in and tried to replicate. I don't remember the first time I was on camera. Oh, well, I did. Yeah, I mean, I did this commercial where I didn't like my hair, so I refused to smile. So they sent me home.
I grew up with so many VHSs of your work of Now and Then and Casper and all these things, but the Addams Family values hold such a special place in my own heart. And I think Joan Cusack should have won an Oscar, and that movie is unreal and hilarious. And, you know, all of your sequences when the kid, she basically sends the kids away to camp because they're such troublemakers and are in the way of her, her plot. And the idea of you two, you and your brother, like at summer camp is so unreal. And what do you remember about filming the Thanksgiving play that basically you guys just destroy?
Yeah, that was a really fun thing. I loved making Addams Family. Everything was super fun. And the props were amazing. And the clothes were cool. And the sets were incredible. And if I had an idea, people would be like, yeah, sure, let's do that, you know? And I remember I was 13 and I was really into movies like Reservoir Dogs and things like that. So I light a match on fire from my foot. And they were like, how is she going to light this match? Like, what are we doing? And I was like, can I have one of those matches? It's like a self-lighting matches. And I light it on myself. And they were like, okay, yeah, you want to do that? And I was like, yes, I do. So, I mean, for me, it was just great. Like, I burned things down and I loved it. I had a great time. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like an unpleasant teen, but I've always enjoyed the more sort of mischievous side of life. And so getting to do things that are not great or not great, but I enjoy sort of the naughtier elements. And so I was always really down for that kind of thing.
Mm. Were you from the very beginning, were you really interested in acting and the craft of acting, or did that come later with like The Ice Storm and The Opposite of Sex? Like, when did it switch for you? Like, I'm a kid and I'm doing this and it's fun, to, oh, this is a serious thing that I'm going to take seriously.
It switched a lot later than you might think. I was sort of just like, oh, this is great. Can't believe people actually do this for a living. So fun and you know, doesn't feel like work. I have to say that attitude did not always serve me well. I have seen some of my earlier movies and just been in shock at how terrible I was in them. I think I didn't really care that much about it being a skill or craft, just because so much was really handed to me early on. Like, I did not earn much of what I had until I started to have to earn it. So like when I wanted to transition from being a kid to an adult and to make movies that were more intellectually challenging or interesting. So I would say probably around Ice Storm, like you were saying, maybe even later than that. You know, it took me a long time to really, you know, it's just there. You can't say enough about the value of having earned things and suffered for them and fought for them. And I was very lucky to be very successful early on. So it took me a while to really realize that I needed to really focus and be the best I could be in many ways.
Well, and how did The Ice Storm come about? Were you actively looking for meatier, kind of more adult style teen roles, or were you still getting pegged to Now and Then or Addams Family, that kind of vibe?
Yeah, I mean, I could have done Disney movies forever. But like I said, I was a child who was watching Tarantino films. You know, I was raised by two people who loved films. So like, I watched Scorsese movies at the age of 10, and my mom showed me all the Hitchcock movies by the time I was 13. And so I really didn't enjoy being in a family affair. I don't remember having that much say or control, but I do think that somehow I expressed not really wanting to. And you know what? The thing that happened is that independent film became very popular just at the time when I was around 16, 17.
Right.
And that really gave me a chance to, you know, there were actually movies that were interesting and dramatic and edgy that I could make at the age of 17. And I think once I made one or two of those and they were successful, my agents at the time saw the value in me not going back and me trying to establish more of a career as an adult, invest in my future, I guess.
And what, when you watched like early, when you watched Hitchcock movies when you were young, what was the one that, like, what was the one that was most indelible or impactful for you?
I've always really loved North by Northwest. I love that one. Vertigo, I love, but I think that I love it the most because of its, there's a scene, oh my God, there's a Terry Gilliam movie. 12 Monkeys, where they go back and they revisit a scene in Vertigo and they really like tie it all together in this incredible like sci-fi way. And I think because I love both those movies, that's why I love Vertigo so much. But North by Northwest, I just love because it's so, it's just such a visually stunning movie. Again, like so just mind, you know, the way it tricks your mind, and it's such an intellectual kind of exercise. I mean, his movies are really fantastic. I was also, there's one called Frantic that my mother made the mistake of showing me really young. indelibly inked my brain. Just like a rapist murderer nonstop in England was really horrifying.
Are you glad though that you have those movies like Adam's Family? Because what a treat to be able to show your kids those kinds of things when they're really young.
That must be a threat. I will never. I mean, I'm certain I'm not one of those. I'm not a person that scoffs at the things that really made me. And I mean, those are so valuable. And that I have them is incredible. And I think if I wasn't in them, I would love them. And they're just fabulous movies. They're great. So, and to have been a part of pop culture in a way is really amazing. I mean, people seem to really love the Addams Family. So it's nice to be a part of something that is so loved and still like perpetuated and enjoyed every year. Halloween is really my time. So,
yeah. This brings us back to your national treasure status.
Yeah.
Christina.
I mean, Halloween. Me and Kevin Bacon. Sweet.
Absolutely. Anyway, Christina Ricci, lots to watch with Christina Ricci in it. However, on November 14th, set your clocks for Yellow Jackets on Showtime. It is such a trip, and congratulations on it. Christina, thank you so much for being here.
This has been the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham, a SiriusXM production. Hear new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.